Vacation Bible School, a wonderful school, and so many of you worked so hard. We're thankful to all of you who did so much to make Vacation Bible School such a great success. We especially owe Roger Harlan a great deal of gratitude, don't we? Roger works hard all year long, but when it comes time for Bible school, he puts a lot of extra effort into getting everything organized and making sure everything just runs as smoothly as it possibly can. He just does a great job. I need to apologize to Roger because of some ongoing things that are happening. I was unable to be as actively involved in Vacation Bible School as I like to be, and couldn't be as supportive of him as I should have been. But that changes today, and I'm thankful to Roger for all of that. For all that he did. I want you to study with me from John chapter 10. Now that's where we're heading, okay? But I need to just back you up a little bit into John chapter 5. In John 10, Jesus talks about being the good shepherd and all of that. Now I'm going to be honest with you. Until I was asked to prepare a lesson for the Higdon congregation this past Wednesday, because Brother Ted Knight could not be with them for their Wednesday series, I'll be honest with you, I thought I knew about this Good Shepherd stuff. But in preparing for that lesson, it began to dawn on me. If we're going to talk about things in their context, then let's talk about them in their context. Here's the context of John chapter 10. In John chapter 5, it's believed to be the fall of about the year 30 AD. We're sure about the year, depending on which feast is involved. It could have been early summer or late fall. Most believe it's late fall, that the feast that is being talked about there is probably the feast of Purim. There at that feast, as Jesus goes to Jerusalem to celebrate that feast, he comes on his travels into the city. He comes to a pool of Bethesda. And there were all kinds of people laying around that pool, because at certain times during the year, an angel would come down and stir the waters of that pool, and whoever got into the pool first received healing. There was a man that was there, lame for 38 years. But every time the pool was stirred, because he was lame, he could never be the first one into the pool. He could never receive the healing. Jesus says to him, "Do you want to be made whole? Then take up your bed and walk." And the man took up his bed and he walked. The problem is, John chapter 5 verse 9. The problem in the minds of some is this. Look, John 5 verse 9. "And immediately the man was made whole, and he took up his bed and he walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath." The Sabbath. And so folks said to him, "What are you doing carrying your bed on the Sabbath day?" And he said, "Well, the man that made me whole told me to take up my bed and walk. And so I'm carrying my bed on the Sabbath day." They said, "Who told you to do this? Who told you to violate this Sabbath day?" Jesus wasn't violating the Sabbath. He was violating their tradition surrounding the Sabbath. He was not honoring the traditions that they had developed. He wasn't breaking the law of God. He is God. He had made that law. He knew what it was. The man said, I don't know. There's so many people here. There was such a crowd of people. I don't know who he was." The man went into the temple, verse number 14, and Jesus found him there and said, "You see, you're whole. Go and sin no more now, lest a worse thing come upon you." The man departed, verse 15, and he went and told those Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. Verse 16 says, "Therefore, these Jews, these Jewish leaders, these Jews persecuted Jesus and sought to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. Jesus answered and said, look, my Father works, so I work. Verse 18, therefore the Jews sought the more to kill him because he had not only broken the Sabbath, but he also said that God was his Father, making him equal with God. Now, I'd suggest you take the time to read this in between stuff, between here and where we're headed. But Jesus will leave Judea. He'll leave this area and he'll go back to Galilee because these Jews are seeking to kill him. Some 1 year to 15 months later, depending on which one of the feasts it is, that first feast is, it could be exactly 1 year, or it could be as much as 15 months later. There's the Feast of the Booths, or the Feast of the Tabernacle, John chapter 7. And Jesus goes back to Jerusalem. As he goes back to Jerusalem, he comes upon another man. This man has been blind from his mother's womb. Oh, I need to share this in chapter 7. As Jesus comes back for this feast, these people are still holding that grudge. 1 year, 15 months later, however long you want to see it, they're still holding this grudge. You violated the Sabbath day. You worked on the Sabbath day. You told someone else to work on the Sabbath day by carrying their bed, and you claim to be the Son of God. And they haven't forgot it. They begin to converse with Jesus, and Jesus says to them, wait a minute. Wait a minute. You, if that's the way you want to look at it, you break the law of Moses. Doesn't the law of Moses say, thou shalt not kill? Doesn't it? And what are they trying to do? Kill him, right? You violate the law of Moses. Jesus says, hey, let's take it down. Let's take it up another level. If there was a child that was born 8 days before the Sabbath day, that child, that boy child, that man child is to be circumcised on the 8th day after his birth, and it's the Sabbath day. You'd circumcise him, and you know you would. Well, if you'll do that, why you got a problem with me when I made a man completely whole? This is verse 21 through 24, John chapter 7. Check me out. As Jesus is there for that feast, he comes on this man in John chapter 9 that's been blind from his mother's womb. Jesus makes some clay, puts it on his eyes, tells him to go and dip in the pool, this pool of Siloam. The man goes and dips, and he comes up seeing. The problem with this, John 9:14, and it was the Sabbath day when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. It's the Sabbath day again when Jesus does this. The Pharisees, the people, when they see this man who they've known, his neighbors, who they know, this guy's been blind from his mother's womb. Some of them said, well, isn't this him? And some said, well, it looks like him. And others said, oh, it's him. It's him. How's he now see? The man answered and said, a man called Jesus. I'm in verse number 11. A man called Jesus made clay, and he anointed my eyes, and he said unto me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And I went and I washed, and I received sight. They said to him, where is he? He said, I don't know. So they brought him to the Pharisees, these Jewish leaders. They brought him to the Pharisees, and the Pharisees asked him how he received his sight. And he told them, Jesus put clay on my eyes, I washed, and I see. And they said, well, this man could not be from God He could not be from God because he doesn't keep the Sabbath. That's verse number 16, John chapter 9. He doesn't keep the Sabbath. Others said, well, how can a man that's a sinner do such miracles? So there's this division among them. They said to the blind man, verse number 17 again, what sayest thou of him that opened your eyes? And the blind man said, he's a prophet. He's a prophet. But the Jews didn't believe him, verse number 18. Even if a man has had his eyes open, who has been blind from his mother's womb, the Pharisees were not about to believe that Jesus was a prophet. They wouldn't believe him. So they called his parents. Now his parents had heard what had been said about Jesus, the instructions that had been given about Jesus. And so they're called before these Pharisees. The Pharisee says, you know, is this your son that was born blind? How does he see now? The parents answered, well, we know that's our son. That's him. We know he was born blind. But he's old enough to speak for himself about how he received his sight. Look at verse number 22. Why did the parents say this? The parents, these words spake his parents because they feared those Jews. For the Jews had already agreed that if any man confessed Christ, that he confessed that he was the Christ, he'd be put out of the synagogue. He's old enough to speak for himself. So the Pharisees asked the blind man again, what did he do to you? And the blind man said, I told you once before and you wouldn't listen to me. Why would I tell you again? Are you ready to listen now? And the blind man says something that must have really set him off, I would think. Or is it because you want to be one of his disciples too? The Pharisees said, you may be his disciple, but we're Moses' disciple. We know God spoke through Moses and spoke to Moses, but we don't know where this man came from. We don't know where he's coming from. The blind man said, well, that's a strange thing. That's strange that you don't know where this man come from. Because we know that since the world began, I'm in verse 32. We know that since the world began, it's not heard that any man opened the eyes of one that was blind. If this man wasn't from God, he couldn't do anything. But you say you don't know where he came from. That's strange. Only God can open a man's eyes. And you don't know where he came from. They ought to know he was from God, right? That's what the blind man's saying. You ought to know he's from God. Verse 34, they said, you've been in sin all your life, and you think you're going to teach us? And they cast him out. They cast him out of the synagogue. Just like Jesus, though. Just like Jesus. Verse 35, Jesus heard they'd cast him out, and he went and he found him. And he said unto him, do you believe on the Son of God? And he answered, Who is he, Lord, that I might believe on him? Jesus said unto him, you've both seen him, and it's him that's talking to you now. Verse 38, and he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. Jesus will go on to say, for judgment I came into this world, and that they which see not might see, and they which see might be blind. Here's a man who couldn't see physically. Now he can see. And there's some Pharisees who say, we see clearly. And they're blind as can be. And some of the Pharisees which were with him heard these words, and they said unto them, are we blind? Are you saying we're blind? 41, Jesus says, if you were blind, you should have no sin. And now you see, we see, therefore sin remaineth. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber. Now, I've done all of that to say to you folks that, look, just because there's a chapter break there doesn't mean this has changed. Who's Jesus talking to? He's talking to those Pharisees who just ask him, are you saying we're blind? And Jesus tells them this little story. It's just a story at the beginning, the first five verses. It's just a story. Don't read more into it than is there. They're not going to understand this story, verse number 6. They're not going to understand this parable. So Jesus is going to expound on it, and we're going to understand it, just like they should have understood it. They're not going to understand it, but it's just a story. So don't read more into it than is there. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber. But he that entereth in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calleth them by name, and he leads them out. They knew that. They were living in an agrarian society. They saw these shepherds all the time. They knew how a fold worked. They knew that no one entered that door but the shepherd. If anyone got in that fold, they climbed up some other way. And Jesus said, and you know as well as I do, that person is a thief and a robber. Thief and a robber, they're not interested in the welfare of the sheep. A thief and a robber is out for themselves. They're looking out for their own good and their own well-being. He says, the porter opens the door to the shepherd. Verse number 3. To him the porter openeth. To the shepherds, not to the thief, not to the robber, but to the shepherd. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice. And he calleth his own sheep by name, and he leadeth them out. And when he puts forth his own sheep, he goes before them. He doesn't drive them, he leads them. He doesn't drive them, he doesn't force them, he leads them. He goeth forth before them, and the sheep follow him, and they know his voice. And a stranger will they not follow, but they'll flee from him, for they know not the voice of the strangers. Now think about what's just happened. A year and 15 months earlier, a man who hadn't walked in 38 years, who had laid by that pool day after day after day, waiting for an angel to stir the waters of the pool, they'd never, not one of those religious leaders, not one of them had ever said, we're with you, we got you. When that angel stirs that water, you're going to be the first one in. We're going to see to it. We're going to help you. Not one time had they offered to help that man. Not one time in 38 years had they offered to help him. In fact, when somebody did come and heal him and tell him to take up his bed and walk, they condemned him, didn't they? When he said it's a man named Jesus, they said he can't be from God because he broke the Sabbath day. Instead of encouraging a man who's been healed to become a disciple of the man who healed him, they're trying to encourage that man to not be one of his sheep. Not be one of his disciples. Here we are a year to 15 months later. A man's been healed of his blindness. instead of rejoicing with the man that he's been healed of his blindness, they condemn him because he says, I'm going to be one of his disciples. I don't know much about him, but here's what I do know. Y'all know this, right? I was blind, but now I see. You'd have been just like him. You'd have said, I don't know a whole lot about him, but I know this. I was blind, now I see. I'm following him. And they said, you may be his disciple, but we'll never be. We'll never be. In fact, if you're going to be his disciple, out of this synagogue, dude. Out of here. Out of here. And they tried to kill the one who healed him. Jesus tells this little story. Do you think they should have seen themselves in this story? I think so. Jesus is talking about these spiritual leaders. Hey, you set yourself up as shepherds, as someone who cares for these people, who takes care of these people, who protects these people, who feeds these people. When really you're just in it for yourself. That's all you're in it for. Verse 6 says, though this parable spake Jesus unto them, but they understood it not. They just didn't get it. They understood not what things they were which he spake unto them. Then Jesus said unto them, so we get it. Then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, I'm the door of the sheep. Jesus did not say, I'm the fold. He said, I'm the door of the sheep. In other words, I serve the sheep. How are they going to get into the fold unless there's a door? I'm the door of the sheep. I serve sheep. Instead of like you guys who want sheep to serve you. I serve sheep. I'm the door of the sheep, he says. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, and the sheep didn't hear them. I'm the door. I serve sheep. I'm the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and he shall go in and out and find pasture. I serve sheep. Verse 10, the thief cometh not but for to steal and to kill and to destroy. That's what the thieves do. That's what they do. They're not interested in the sheep. They're not interested in the welfare of the sheep. They're interested in their own agenda. And that's to steal and to kill and to destroy. But I've come that they might have life and have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd, Jesus says. He's the good shepherd. He's talking to them. You're thieves. And folks, it hadn't changed over the years. There are still people who are setting themselves up to be spiritual leaders. But they're interested in those people following them instead of those people following Jesus. That's what the Pharisees were guilty of, right? That's what these Jews were guilty of. Hey, the blind man said, do you want to be one of his disciples? Is that the reason you're asking? You may be his disciple, but not us. The very people who ought to be pointing people to Jesus are in it for their own good and for their own well-being. They were in Jesus' time, they are in our time. What's the challenge for us? The challenge is identify that thief. Identify that robber. Identify them. And don't follow them. Follow Jesus. Yes? Follow Jesus. He's the good shepherd. Follow Jesus. He's it. Have you ever been robbed? You ever been burglarized? Our house was. Debbie had been there that morning to bring some soup because she thought Beverly was at home, sick. Debbie has a key to our house. Don't tell everybody. Debbie had a key to our house, and she just went on in and put that soup in that refrigerator. She hadn't been gone 5 minutes. Because we're texting along. I'm out here doing something. Just go on in. Put it in there. I hadn't been gone. We hadn't missed each other but just a few minutes. I drive in. I'm on the phone with Beverly. I walk up under the carport. Who's been at our house? There's a puddle of water on the carport. Beverly said, oh, that was Debbie. She came to bring me some soup. I said, oh, okay. I take another step. Wait a minute. Debbie left the back door open. So I go and I pull the storm door and I go step in. Wait a minute. Debbie messed my house up. Wait a minute. I don't think Debbie did this. There's been a thief in my house. Have you ever had something like that happen to you? What's your first feelings? I'll tell you what mine was, folks. Anger. That's the first thing. Well, first it was fear. First it was fear, and then it was anger. And I'm still not over it. You say, well, it's been a year almost. Time to get over it. Maybe it is, but I'm still not over it. I hope they don't find out who broke into my house. It's probably not going to be. You know, I'm probably not going to be a nice person. Jesus says a thief comes but to steal, kill, and destroy. You can follow that one. You can follow that shepherd. I've come that you might have life and have it more abundantly. Now, which one are you going to follow? Which one? No choice with me. I'm telling you, no choice with me. I've experienced that stealing. I've experienced that destroying. No question with me. I'm following the good shepherd. In case you don't know it, that's what I'm encouraging you to do. There's all kinds out there. There's all kinds who are putting themselves up as, I'll be your shepherd, you follow me. When all they're looking for is their own self-glorification, their own self-fulfillment, their own feathering their own nest, their own making themselves rich at your expense. But there's a good shepherd. There's a good shepherd. In case you don't understand me, I'm trying to get you as a congregation of God's people to follow that shepherd. Follow that shepherd. That shepherd, Jesus says. Verse number 11. I'm the good shepherd, and the good shepherd gives his life for his sheep. Jesus will at this point talk about a hireling, a man who's been hired to look out for the sheep. He's been hired to look over the sheep and keep to make sure the sheep stay safe. But when a wolf comes, what does a hireling do? I'm out of here, right? Because they're not his sheep anyway. A hireling is gone. How are you going to tell the difference between a good shepherd and a hireling? When the wolf comes, the hireling runs. When the wolf comes, the good shepherd stays in there. He got a job to do. It's protect those sheep. Protect those sheep. The good shepherd, Jesus says, gives his life for his sheep. I'll give you three things. We'll take them home with us, okay? We'll go eat lunch. Three things. You ought to follow the good shepherd. Number one, because the good shepherd is fully committed to his sheep. He's not like that hireling. He's not like that hireling. A hireling will flee when the wolf comes. A shepherd will stay. A shepherd will defend those sheep. No matter what, a shepherd will defend those sheep. It might cost the shepherd his life. Did it? He died for his sheep, right? He died for his sheep. You need to follow the good shepherd because the good shepherd is fully committed to you. You say, oh, but he doesn't know, but you don't know what I've done. Jesus knows what you've done. He knows the things you have done. In fact, he knows the things you've done, and he died because you did those things. He's fully committed to you. Fully committed to you. What you need to do is be fully committed to the good shepherd. Number two, you need to follow the good shepherd because the good shepherd has a spiritual connection with the sheep. He knows you by name. Isn't that what he said? That shepherd knows his sheep by name. He calls them by name and they follow him because they know him. He knows them, they know him. There is this spiritual connection that you need with the good shepherd, that I need with the good shepherd. A connection which the Apostle Paul, described as this. Christ is the head of the church, right? And we as his disciples make up his body. Now you can't get more connected than that, folks. You can't get more connected than that. Jesus is spiritually connected to his sheep. How about the Pharisees? How about those Jewish leaders? Any spiritual connection they felt with these, that they wanted to follow them? Not in the least. Not in the least. Number three, you need to follow the good shepherd because the good shepherd wants to serve you. A good shepherd wants to serve. The good shepherd isn't looking to be served. A good shepherd's looking to serve. Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd, and I lay down my life for my sheep. He'll say a little bit later, in verse number 16, he'll say it again. I lay down my life for my sheep. He'll say in verse number 17, I lay it down of my own accord. No man takes it from me. I lay it down, I can take it up again. He'll end this little section by saying, down around verse number 18, 19, he'll say, I received this commandment from my Father. The Father made me the good shepherd. Who made you? And the answer from a Pharisee, from a leadership among the Jewish people, and the answer from your TV evangelist that you're following so close, it doesn't make any difference what he says. He'd never tell me wrong. He'd never do me wrong. He's lying in his pockets. He's lying in his pockets, folks. Many times. He's not looking out for you. He's looking out for him. He's looking out for him. And many, many others. And many, many others. That's the reason Thomas and I are continually telling you as a congregation, you don't follow us, you follow Jesus. Don't we tell you that? You follow Jesus. Don't you follow an elder? Don't you follow a deacon? Don't you follow a Bible class teacher? Don't you follow your mama? Don't you follow your daddy? Don't you follow your grandparents? You be a disciple of Jesus. He's the good shepherd. He's the good shepherd. And folks, not only did he serve you all the way through from creation, not only did he serve you, he's still serving you. He's still serving you. The Hebrew writer will say in Hebrews 7:25, he is able to save unto the uttermost all who come to God by him. Listen now. Seeing that he ever liveth to make intercession for us. That good shepherd is there speaking on the behalf of his sheep over and over and over again. Father, they're mine. They're mine. Enough said. Enough said. But you got to be one of his. You got to be one of his. So we close with this. Jesus never, never encouraged you, me, or anyone else to be a disciple of anyone except him. Think. I challenge you. When a preacher or teacher tells you something like that, if he's wrong, you ought to be able to show him. Show me one time, any place that Jesus said, what I want you to do is I want you to be their disciple. Never. Never. But Jesus invites you to be his. Right? Jesus invites you to be his. You remember we studied it in Vacation Bible School. One of you sets of teachers taught this to our children. Peter, James, and John, they're out there, you know, they fished all night on the Sea of Galilee, hadn't caught anything. Jesus comes down to the seaside, followed by a multitude. They press upon him, wanting to hear what he has to say. Jesus steps over into the boat and says, could you cast out just a little ways so I can speak to these people? And they cast out Jesus. We don't even know what he said, do we? We don't even know what he said. Until finally he turns to the fishermen and says to them, if you'll throw your net out over there in the deep, you'll catch a lot of fish. Now think about what that's asking. What were these disciples, what were these men doing when Jesus came upon them? They had fished all night, caught nothing. Now what are they doing? Cleaning their nets. If you throw that net over there, guess what you're going to have to do? Catch fish or not, guess what you're going to have to do? You're going to have to clean that net again, aren't you? And they say, well, we fished all night and we caught nothing, but if that's what you say. And so they tossed that net out. Caught enough fish, the boats were sinking. Called in other boats, right? And the boats were sinking. Folks, this is money for those guys. That's how they make their living. Listen. Dollar bills were swimming out of their sight. I mean, the fish are jumping over the sides of the boat. This is their money. This is how they make their living. I can just see those guys. Oh, there goes another one, and trying to grab those fish and keep them all in the boat, and the boat's starting to sink and all of that. All of them except for Peter. All of them except for Peter. Peter hits his knees. He says, Lord, I'm a sinful man. Depart from me. And Jesus said, you come follow David. You come follow Thomas. You come follow this one. You come, who did Jesus say follow? You come follow me, and I'll make you something. I'll make you something you're not by not following me. I'll make you a fisher of men. And they arose and went. No argument, no discussion. They arose and went. Hey, here's another one. Y'all know this one, right? Matthew 11:28-30. Jesus, come unto me. Come unto who? Come unto me, Jesus said. All ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Learn from me. Learn of me. Let me be your teacher, because I'm meek and I'm lowly in heart. In me you'll find rest for your souls, for my burden is easy. My yoke is light. Follow me. Just before his arrest, folks, just before his arrest, in John 14, Jesus said in verse 6, I'm the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life. And no man comes to the Father. No one comes to the Father but by me. He's just inviting people to come to him, to come to him. He wants to be your good shepherd. He wants to be mine. A shepherd who is committed to his sheep. A shepherd who is spiritually connected to his sheep. A good shepherd who wants to serve his sheep. A good shepherd who, when the wolf comes, he doesn't run. He stays right in there with us and protects us. And those sheep who recognize that good shepherd, they love and appreciate him for it, right? Yes, he serves the sheep, but those sheep serve him. But we serve him because, well, let's put it this way, in the words of John in his little letter, 1 John chapter 3, we love him because he first loved us. If you're not one of his disciples, if you're not one of his sheep, why not today? Let's do it today. You're here and you're not a disciple of Jesus Christ. You come with that heart full of faith. You come determining to repent of those things which you've done in your life, which are not in accordance with his will. Confess with your mouth. You believe he is the Son of God. Be baptized like he instructed. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. Those other shepherds, they'll do everything in the world to try to explain Jesus. You know the most dangerous thing you can hear from a teacher is this: well, it don't really mean that. And here they'll go. If it said it, folks, if Jesus said it, he meant it. That's the way it is. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. So you come. You come and be baptized today. You're here. You're one of his sheep. But you're one of these sheep that he just helps keep going out and finding, that's lost in the way, that's lost out there. He loves you and he's committed to you, and he does that. He does that. But a sheep that really loves the master wants to stay close to the master, doesn't he? He appreciates that master. He appreciates that shepherd. If you're out there, we invite you as a sheep to come home. It's his invitation, not mine. If you stand in need of his invitation, let us know by coming to the front. Do that now as together we stand and sing.